I'd like to welcome you to Peyto Exploration and Development Corp's 2010 Reserves Podcast. We have Darren G., the President and CEO, Scott Robinson, our COO, and Arrico Espiritu, our Engineering Manager, to talk about our 2010 Reserves Report and what it means about the company and where we're at right now. So I'd like to first ask a question of Darren. We issued a news release presenting highlights of the independent reserve report conducted by Insight Petroleum Consultants, formerly Paddock Lindstrom & Associates. From the numbers presented, our proved producing, proved undeveloped, and proved plus probable reserves increased substantially in volume. What have we done over the last year to accomplish this?
Well, Jim, you know, I would say that what we accomplished over the last year was, in many ways, exactly what we said we were going to do a year ago. We went out, we drilled a large program, mostly horizontal wells. We converted a little under 21 million barrels of reserves from undeveloped to developed, proved producing. We used the horizontal well design. We were able to contact more reservoir with the horizontal wells, and then using multiple fracs along the horizontal laterals, we're able to develop more of the reserves and the resource in every well. Of course, it costs more to do it that way, but not proportionately more. Actually, it's slightly less, which is why we've seen lower FD&A costs for proved producing than we have over the last, say, few years. I think this year was 1263 per BOE, the last three-year average around 1450. And that was, of course, the activity that affected the cash flow. The proved producing reserves are those that generate the cash flow, but we also had a lot of activity that affected the future. And in many ways, I think it was more significant this year than even the conversion from undeveloped to developed. We saw total proven reserves go up by 21%, proved plus probable reserves go up by 30%. And I think there's several reasons for the big increases in undeveloped reserves. For one, we're executing a much larger capital program now, and we have a large program ahead of us in 2011. So we're developing more reserves faster, and so we can recognize more of the undeveloped reserves. If we were only investing $75 million a year, like we were, say, in 2009, then 4 or 5 years of future undeveloped inventory would only equate to about $300 or $400 million of future undeveloped capital. So not nearly as much reserves gets developed with that much capital. But now that we're up to, you know, $300 million a year of capital investment, 4 or 5 years, that's $1.5 billion of future undeveloped. Now we can start to recognize much more of the undeveloped resource within a short time frame because we're developing it much faster. You know, secondly, I'd say we've proven the application of horizontal wells in more zones. And by doing so, we've been able to recognize there's more resource there for us to develop this way. The Falher Formation is a good example of that, where we didn't have hardly any Falher undeveloped reserves recognized in the reserve report last year. This year, we've got significantly more because we've drilled some successful Falher horizontal wells and brought those on production this year. So we've been able to prove up and book more of that undeveloped potential, whether it's proven or it's in just the probable additional category. You know, and I think thirdly what we did this year was we went out and acquired a lot of new land. We bought close to 100 sections of new land, all of it with undeveloped reserves and drilling locations on it. That we identified that land as having those attributes. That's why we wanted it. That's why we went and bought it. But relative to past years, it's a lot more land than we've bought. You know, in 2009, for instance, we bought 31 sections of new land, a little over $130 an acre. So in 2010, 100 sections, three times as much at close to the same price. In 2008, we only bought 5 sections of new land. So 100 new sections of land is a ton of new undeveloped potential that we've also added to our inventory. So I think all in all, a really big year for us, 2010, in terms of not only the large conversion of undeveloped to developed, but also being able to add to our undeveloped inventory in a big way.
Okay. Despite the name change to Insight Petroleum Consultants from Paddock Lindstrom & Associates, we've been using the same independent engineering firm to evaluate our reserves for a long time now. Why do we use this firm?
You know, we get that question a lot. Why don't we use somebody like GLJ or Sproul or one of the, I guess, larger shops, one of the more recognized names in the reserve evaluation industry, especially in Canada, one that perhaps the investment community is more familiar with. You know, I would liken it a lot to using your local pro at your golf course. you know, we could go to Golf Town, the GLJs of the world, the big box type reserve evaluators. We'd go in the door, and of course, you know, we would be greeted by some young guy, and we'd say, we need to buy a driver that fits our game, and he would go to the shelf and pull off the new TaylorMade driver and hand it to us and say, this is the one for you. And not knowing any better, as opposed to going to your local pro shop and getting a guy that's got 20 years experience fitting clubs to golfers and, you know, takes you out back and does a lot of work and a lot of homework to figure out what the very best equipment for your game is going to be. I mean, that's sort of the difference, I think, between using the GLJs and the Spruels of the world and using someone like Paddock, where instead of getting, you know, a 3 or 5 year engineer that we're going to have to teach them how to do reservoir engineering and reserves evaluation on this unconventional type gas resource, we get a guy that's 25 years or 20 years of experience looking at our stuff, who's already done his homework, who's been working on this type of asset for the last 10 years, who understands how to evaluate tight gas, understands the resource that we're developing, understands the mechanisms that contribute to getting the answer right on these reserves the first time around. Because that's what's really important. I mean, not only do we want to recognize for our shareholders the value and the amount of asset that we have and we have developed here at Peyto, but they need to get the answer right from the start so that we know going forward, can we continue to develop this effectively? Are we going to get the returns? Because it's a lot of capital we're putting to work every year for shareholders. So, you know, I think the experience is very important. We're getting that at this pro shop that we're going to, which is Insight, and Peter Hidalgo is the main engineer that's worked our account for the last dozen years. I think through time we've proven that obviously he's doing an excellent job of booking the reserves, the right amount of reserves to the wells that we're drilling.
Mm-hmm. Rico, last year when we sat down to discuss this, we had results from two formations from horizontal drilling and looked forward to trying more to date. Which formations have we worked with in horizontal wells? And is there any potential for us to do horizontal wells in other formations that we have not tried in 2009 and 2010?
Thanks, Jim. Good morning, everyone. Well, in addition to the well-rich and cardio formations that we tried last year, we have drilled horizontal wells on three more horizons, namely the Naughty Key One, Upper and Middle Falaris, and the Cadman. As of the end of December 2010, Peyto had drilled 46 horizontal wells, including, of course, the three wells we drilled in 2009, and the breakdown is as follows. 15 cardio wells, 18 well-rich wells, 10 Naughty Key One wells, 2 Fuller wells, and 1 Cadman horizontal well. Now for this year, in addition to our development program in the greater Sundance area, we will continue our efforts to determine the economic viability of horizontal well drilling and multi-stage fracturing technology in our northern area properties such as Cutbank, Kiskew, Kakwa, and Chime, where we all know production from the Dandaga and Cardin formations are being produced by vertical wells at this time. Now we hope to have a few horizontal wells drilled in the Dandaga, specifically in card information in these areas by this time next year.
Okay. So, Rico, last year and this year, the reserve reports have shown an increase in our reserves due to the ability of horizontal drilling to unlock more value on our existing lands than vertical wells would. As well, the fact that we've increased our land holdings and explored more, are we likely to find in 2011 that we still have more value to unlock on our existing lands with horizontal drilling and other improvements in our drilling technology?
Yes, I truly believe that there will be more values to unlock this year. The increase in our drilling inventory this year is a direct result of our drilling success in 2010. We will be doing more of the same thing this year, and as we step out into areas not proven in the past, and if we find drilling success there, we will prove out more reserves and open up new areas for future development. For example, as I mentioned earlier, the Cardium and then Begin formations in our northern areas, as well as the Cadman in Sundance, offer so much resource potential, so we need to continue our focus and efforts in these areas. In addition, as Jerry mentioned, the land holdings we've acquired in the past year have the potential to bring substantial value to the company, so we will be drilling some wells on these lands as well.
Okay. Scott, we've increased production substantially since this time last year. How have we dealt with our infrastructure to deal with the increased volumes? What are our plans to accommodate for the growth of in our capital plans for 2011 and the future?
Yeah, Jim, last year there was a substantial production increase by about 10,000 barrels or 60 million cubic feet equivalent. And the primary facility activities that we undertook to accommodate that growth was a fairly substantial expansion of our Nose Hill plant from about 30 to 70 million cubic feet a day, and we expanded compression at Wild Hay, and both of those projects were done in a very timely fashion. Looking forward to this year and the additional growth in production that we anticipate, we have about 75 million of processing equipment packages, that two packages, a 25 million and a 50 million package that should be ready for us to deploy by the middle of the year. In addition, we have four compressor packages good for another 40 million of compression. We will take that equipment and place it where needed as the well results come in over the year. We're anticipating taking our Nose Hill plant up another stage from that 70 million to above 100 million a day about middle of this year. So with that equipment, should we need more, we'll continue to acquire compressor packages as required. But that equipment alone should give us about 12,000 barrels a day of additional capacity beyond where we stand today.
Okay.
Just a kind of an interesting attribute, that equipment is worth about $20 million in total. And if you look at that on a production basis, its cost is a little under $2,000 per flowing barrel to the cost of bringing that production on.
And, you know, with our track record from all the horizontal wells that we're producing from now, have we seen a shift in the ratio of the mix of natural gas, liquids, and gas? Also, how is the heat content of the gas we're producing compared to the vertical wells in the same formation?
Yeah, let's just start from the beginning of last year to best address that question. We started last year, at the beginning of 2010, at about 97 million cubic feet of gas and 3,800 barrels a day. Over the course of the year, that base production declined some and was replaced and grown through the drilling of these wells that we've spoken of here today. About a third of our wells were Cardium, the horizontals, and two-thirds were the drier, Notikewin and Wilriches. The Cardium wells helped keep our liquid rate at about the 3,800 barrel a day range. So it did not deteriorate over the year. It was fairly flat, maybe grew slightly by the end of the year. The drier gas wells did dominate and brought our gas total gas production from that 97 million up above 150 million. So the net effect was that the liquid to gas ratio dropped, but on an absolute basis, the liquid production was sustained. Insofar as our sales gas goes, there was a small drop in the heat content by about 1%, down to a level of about 1,090 BTUs per standard cubic foot.
Okay. Rico, 2010 was the first year with horizontal wells being produced. How has our knowledge of their decline profiles evolved? How closely does it match the projections from the reserve report last year?
Well, Jim, our older horizontal wells have performed very well. But I caution that 15 months of production or so represent a very small percentage of the well's overall producing lives. So it's still premature to conclude either way. However, we're starting to see a stabilizing effect on the older wells, and it seems that the rates are still substantially higher than the average of the typical vertical wells of the same species type at the same point in time. Now, because the horizontal wells start at 6 to 8 times higher than the average vertical wells, they do decline faster in the neighborhood of 50 to 70% the first year. Now, we compared the reserves booking of our first three horizontal wells last year to this year's assessment and found that all three wells are performing according to InSight's forecast, if not slightly better. Two of the three horizontal wells had slight increases in their proven reserves assignment, while the third well had no change in its reserves. Overall, I believe that the type curves that InSight's using to predict future performance are working out very well.
Okay. Now, we know that there are significant changes to our decline profile, both because of the shift to horizontal wells and also a much larger percentage of our current production are from assets under a year old. Can you describe the outlook going forward for declines in our base production in 2011?
Sure. Our base production decline for 2011 will be higher than any of the previous years, because we now have more than 40 producing horizontal wells in our base production, and because we know these wells decline faster than vertical wells, we can expect our base production decline for 2011 to approach 30 to 34%. Our historical yearly decline rates with vertical wells have been in the 20 to 22% range, but since they were on the wells now account for approximately 44% of our total production, it's not difficult to realize that the combined annual decline rate will be substantially higher than last year's rate. And as we continue to increase our horizontal well count, we can expect our annual decline rates going forward to remain in the low to mid-30s.
Okay. Darren, how has the ever-changing environment of royalties, royalty credits, and other direct and indirect incentives affected us in 2010, and what is the outlook for these in 2011?
You know, Jim, unfortunately, 2010 was another year of change when it comes to the fiscal regime that we're working in. But I think, you know, 2010's changes were, for the most part, positive, at least as far as they affected our business. You know, the government came out in the spring wanting to look at the competitiveness of Alberta relative to other jurisdictions. They brought in a permanency to the 5% one-year new well incentive, which actually is 18 months for horizontal wells. So that five-year limit on royalties in the first year or so is, you know, obviously a nice incentive for new drilling, which, since Peyto's all about putting the bit to work and drilling new wells, it affects us directly. You know, they raised the trigger depth, for instance, on the deep gas, natural gas deep drilling program to 2,000 meters, which has a very positive effect for us. Now, all of a sudden, our Cardium zone that has, you know, represents a lot of our undeveloped and a lot of our developed, for that matter, is now eligible for that deep gas drilling incentive. And because the incentive is measured off of total well length, the horizontal wells earn us quite a good royalty holiday, which basically caps our royalties at 5% for close to the first 5 years now. So both of those changes, I think, very positive for us in terms of the type of resource and where we're developing it. Then they changed the royalty curves, too. They flattened out the natural gas royalty curve to bring the max royalty paid down from 50% to, I believe it was around 36%. So if we ever see the high commodity prices again that those curves are based off of, I think we hit that max at about $10 gas or something, but which would be a nice change from $4 gas. But, you know, we're not obviously going to be exposed to the same kind of royalty rates. And so there's upside there, upside that the producer can enjoy if we do start to get the commodities increasing. For 2011, I don't think we're expecting too much change. You know, the end of the new well incentive program comes in the spring of 2011. So that $200 a meter that you earn for drilling a new well, we lose that program. But, you know, the reality was we weren't able to use a lot of that program anyway, because of where gas prices are and because of the low levels of royalty that we were paying as a result of the low gas prices, we really weren't able to use up all that drilling credit or that $200 a meter credit that we were earning with the drilling activity. So, you know, the fact that that program is going away, it's not hurting us as much as you might think, because we weren't able to take advantage of as much of it. As far as the future goes, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some changes. When you look at the Alberta government and the monies they're bringing in from oil and gas royalties, it's tight for them. They're fully exposed to these low gas prices. And when you look at the royalty revenues that they're bringing in from natural gas over the last few years, it's dropped off significantly. In 2008, the Alberta government took in around $6 billion in natural gas royalties. In 2009, that had dropped down to around $2 billion, and it's going to be about $2 billion again for this year. You know, in contrast, they're making more off of their new land sales this year than they are off of all their natural gas production royalties. So, you know, can these be sustainable levels as we move forward? I don't know. It's going to be pretty tight. They're obviously making a bigger share of their royalty revenue off of oil right now with high oil prices. And so at some point in the future, I suppose if natural gas prices recover, then they'll start to make more off of those. But right now, they're making very little off the natural gas that's being produced in the province.
Mm-hmm. Now, Scott, how do our current drilling plans hold us through breakup season? Are we taking advantage of longer horizontal well drilling times and the potential to drill several in one spot to keep our activity levels higher in the coming breakup season?
Jim, we've got 6 rigs running right now, just finishing up our northern program, and we'll have all 6 of those rigs down in the Sundance area for the beginning of breakup. We've done some planning to situate those rigs on multi-well pads, pads that are in close proximity. So we'll be set up to conduct activity as long as feasible and to break up. But a lot of that will, of course, depend on weather and road ban situations and whatnot. There is still the need to get cementers and equipment and other loads of required equipment into these leases throughout the drilling operation. So it'll really depend on how breakup shakes out this year. But we will put ourselves in a position to be able to execute through breakup if the weather allows. Now, our plans, our $300 million capital program and 60-some-odd wells resultant from that do not at all depend on that activity. If we're able to conduct activity through breakup at the same cost that we would otherwise, then we will do that. If not, then we will just have to take that April-May time off and resume in June and complete our program over the course of the year.
Okay. Now, between this year's reserve report and our last one, our FD&A costs have seen a small decrease in the proved producing category and increases in the total proved and proved plus probable. Can you explain the differences there?
Sure. And my colleagues here may want to add to this, but I'll start off. The PDP F&D, proved developed F&D costs, came down slightly from the previous year of 1358 to this year's reported number of 1263 per BOE. And this is primarily because of the greater reserves and capital efficiency associated with the large content of horizontal wells that we executed during the year. About 82% of our wells were horizontal. Not only do these wells add more reserve per invested dollar and hence the lowering of this ratio, it's important also to recognize as an additional attribute that they contribute more value potency as compared to vertical wells because of their high early time production associated with the wells. The two other categories are total proved and proved plus probable F&D, of course, represent the impact of additional bookings and the changes in future development capital of those bookings and the previous bookings in those categories. So we saw over the course of last year to this year, those two numbers, the total proved and the 2P F&D, increase from 1040 and 880 to 14 and $13 respectively. The biggest part of this is associated with the change in future development capital. Last year we had about 110 booked undeveloped horizontals, which were largely comprised of Cardium wells. And we were new to the game, and we had costs associated with the future wells that were based on what we knew at that time. Since then, we found that these wells cost a little bit more to drill. The service costs themselves have come up and resulted in this. And as a result, those Cardium wells had to undergo an increase in the future development cost by about $500,000 per well. And so that ratio, the change in the future development, had to bear, this year's number had to bear that full correction in the cost associated with those wells. And in addition, we have a lot more horizontal undeveloped bookings this year. So in composite, those ratios went up. If we look at just on an absolute basis, our proved undeveloped locations are going to require $740 million, and the probable locations another $569 million to develop. And when you divide those numbers by the reserves associated with those wells, it comes out right at about the $10 per barrel level. So had there not been any changes to the future development capital, had it been a pure flat year, then we would have seen those two categories at about the $10 level, which is an extremely attractive F&D level compared to other industry competitors.
Back to you, Darren, for the last question. Can you give us an idea as to where we're going from here in terms of our exploration and development plans?
Sure, Jim. You know, as Scott just mentioned, we've got a $300-plus million capital program now approved and ready to go. That'll equate to close to 60 net wells for this year. So a very active year is planned in terms of converting undeveloped reserves into developed reserves and into reserves that are producing and generating cash flow, which perhaps even more importantly. And in addition, I think, you know, we're actually going to continue to look at the future and look at expanding the resource potential that we have and the undeveloped potential that we have. As always, we're going to continue to look for undrilled opportunity that we don't own today. We can go out and secure, whether that's through Crown land sales, whether that's through farm-ins, whether that's through making a few acquisitions even. But the great thing is that we have already in inventory a lot of undeveloped. At this current pace, probably 5 or 6 years of undeveloped drilling already identified in inventory. And so we don't have to be desperate to get those new opportunities. We can be very disciplined. We can make sure that what we're paying for that new land is attractive and that all in we can generate a very good return on those opportunities. We can make sure that the terms of those farm-ins ensure that we are going to generate good positive rates of return and good returns for our shareholders in terms of that capital that we're investing there. And even when we look at acquisitions, we can be disciplined. We don't have to have it. You know, there's a lot of companies out there that they have a little bit of opportunity in front of them, and so they're looking at half the acquisitions that they have to have, and they pay at rates that, you know, reflect the fact that they have to have it. So, you know, we can be much more disciplined than that in terms of our capital investments going forward. We can make sure that we're going to generate a good return, or we don't buy it, or we don't secure it, because we already have a lot of inventory already, and where is this stuff going to occur? Is it going to be 4 or 5 years out? Well, you know, the value addition to that when you discount that future cash flow is going to be a little less. So we're going to have to make sure we secure those opportunities cheaply. Now, that being said, we do have a huge amount of inventory in front of us. And, you know, we've said in past conference calls that the challenge in front of us today is to scale up. Scale up with the retention of these efficiencies. Scale up with an ability to generate the same types of rates of return. Scale up with the ability to deliver to shareholders the same kind of return on capital, return on equity that we've been delivering in the past. And so that's the challenge in front of us. How do we do 60 wells this year? How do we do 70 or 80 wells next year? How do we do maybe 100 horizontal wells 1 year, which would be close to $500 million capital program? Obviously, it may take a few more people, and we need to ensure that the efficiency of our operation is retained. We need to ensure that the returns that we're generating are just as high as we can when we do half as much program, because if they're not, I mean, there's really no point in doing more for less. We want to do more for the same amount of profit, and that's the ideal. So we've got a lot of inventory in front of us, and we're going to have to look at how do we do more and faster and generate even more returns for our shareholders going forward.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for sharing with the audience here. And thank you, listeners, for being curious and being interested.